Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
TV.
On the radio.
Roll it there, Colette.
Hey, how you doing?
Bazinga.
Well, I didn't expect the kind of Spanish Inquisition.
One for everybody in the audience.
It's going to be legendary.
You just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
I want you to focus on your mitochondrial lines exclusively.
I'm not teaching next semester at all.
Not this fall, no. But it won't affect your tenure application.
What the hell, Dan?
This is an opportunity.
As opposed to what it is. What is it?
It's an overabundance of caution, I'm sure. The new Board of Regents is concerned that you're not maintaining a healthy learning environment. Do you have a picture of Syl and Oliver on your phone?
Of course.
That probably wasn't smart.
That's The Handmaid's Tale. It's on Thursdays, 9:30 p.m. RTE2. They're the first people in Europe to get it, and you can catch up on the RTE player. James Dempsey joins us once again. Hugely anticipated the return of this.
Very much so.
Has it kept up the standard?
I think yes and no, kind of. The problem with a show like this is that it comes out of, I mean, not nowhere, because there's a very, very well-known Margaret Atwood book, and kind of, I think, probably a forever in print and perennially popular dystopian book. But it had seemed to just sort of, the show had come out of nowhere and really suddenly captured people's attention. And it should be noted that it is, you know, it's made by Hulu in the US, which is another subscription service that we actually don't have access to yet, anyway. And it is the first online sort of a streaming show to win the Emmy for Best Drama. And it sort of is considered, I think, in Hollywood, a very game-changing show because of that. And I think people really, I mean, warm to it isn't maybe the right word, because there isn't much warmth to it, but people really liked it, certainly, and were very intrigued by it, because it came out at this time, you know.
It's opposite that it's coming out.
Yes.
And, you know, because of Me Too and all that kind of
very
stuff.
And particularly because, you know, if it's about a year since it came out, Donald Trump had been in office for about 2-3 months at that point, and there was a sense of the degradation of American democracy. Mm. And that is essentially what the show is about, how America has fallen to this, you know, very paternalistic, patriarchal regime known as Gilead, in which... I think you're supposed to believe that an STD has made women all around the world sterile, and only some women are fertile, and they are essentially co-opted and kidnapped and forced into sex trafficking to bear the children of these commanders of the regime. And you get Elizabeth Moss, who people will know of Mad Men and West Wing fame, playing Offred, who is literally of Fred, but better known as June. And she is the handmaid who lives in the house and undergoes monthly, sexual
right.
results. Yes.
Yeah.
And all in the name of getting pregnant to provide a baby for the regime. And the first season ended with the news that she was with child, rather kind of conveniently for her, but also ended with the handmaid, her sort of leading the other handmaids to a slight rebellion, you know, that another handmaid was to be stoned to death by them, and she sort of refused to do so, and they all followed suit. And this first episode opened with this 5-minute sequence that I thought was quite chilling in its own way, even though, I mean, I kind of figured how it was going to end because it was the very first scene in the episode. But I thought it was very chilling in some ways, because you saw that, you know, it's depicting this world where any victory that the handmaids gain is immediately followed by, you know, a reminder of their situation. And it was this 5-minute sequence that ends with Offred saying, you know, what the actual F, which shows the kind of how they pepper the season with jokes, not many of them, but sort of enough to just cut through the tension. I don't know, you know, with a show like this, I think it is a show you have got to watch on a weekly basis rather than in like 3-4 episode binges, because it's not fun, right?
No.
It's not nice. It is unpleasant, and it is not unafraid of its unpleasantness. You know, I don't think it shies away. I think it is very sort of, I think it has been credited, particularly for its depictions of the rape scenes, for focusing on the woman at the centre, not in any way stylizing it. Even though the rest of the show is actually quite stylized in a very pared back way, it plays very nicely, kind of with color and costume and stuff like that, to depict the world. But those scenes are sort of, you know, very much straight into Elizabeth Moss's face.
Yeah.
And as an actress, she's really doing a lot of face acting, if I can call that a skill, you know, because what works extremely well in a show like this that doesn't work in other shows is, first of all, you get a lot of flashbacks,
yeah,
which can often pull away from other shows. And then you get a lot of monologuing by her. And often monologue, you know, is perilous. Like if you would think back to a show like Scrubs, which had monologues throughout the whole thing, you know, became after a while, the sort of freshness of that wore off and it became this trite device that was, you know, very cloying and annoying at times. Whereas here, and I'm not just, that's not to say that it won't become annoying, but it hasn't yet.
Yeah.
Certainly what they do extremely well here is very clever use of sort of all the, you know, I'm about to say mise-en-scene, which is really bad, right? But anyway, of all the placement of the characters and the position of the camera, it's a lot of very tight focused, like full frontal close-ups, which are there to kind of show you the narrowness of her world.
Yeah, it's claustrophobic.
Yeah,
their world.
It is claustrophobic.
And it's literally claustrophobic in the first episode when, you know.
Yes, very much so. Yeah. And I mean, I think there were definitely allusions to kind of like Auschwitz or something going on in that sequence as well, that, you know, that cannot be denied. Now, at the same time, I think the problem is, it's the kind of, the foot is always on the throttle here, right? Like it's very difficult to maintain this constant revving of tension without kind of cutting through it with a bit of levity or something, or also without overdoing it and sort of, you know, blowing the engine. Because, you know, as we know, by this stage we are, I don't know, the 11th, 12th episode into a 12-hour long story. We know vaguely what's happening, right? We know America has fallen. We don't necessarily need to know exactly every detail about how it's fallen.
Mm.
And some of the bits are a bit heavy-handed
Respect. Actually, funny enough, because I was going to, like, even that clip that we played is a flashback, and it's Emily's story, and we find out that Emily was a lecturer in a university. Mm. And again, it's part of this, how America fell, and was it kind of a bit redundant, really? Did we need to know that at all? And is there a danger that if they're going to keep doing that, they're going to end up repeating themselves?
Certainly, because you would imagine, I mean, the women, Emily's story is different in the sense that she's a lesbian, right?
Yeah.
And she has this Canadian lesbian wife and son who we then later on see fleeing to Canada while she gets pulled behind. What a sort of a kind of a focal point of that episode is, they're at the airport and they're being interviewed by this sort of security guard, and he refuses to accept their marriage license, saying, well, now this is illegal. And, you know, if you were to see this episode in isolation, you would kind of see, you would think, OK, this is a very interesting depiction of like the power paradigm and how the law can go from being on your side to immediately not being on your side just on the whim of, you know, on the whim of whoever is in power. Mm-hmm. Right. Which is fine, except we got that already in the first season, where there was a scene where, you know, June and her friend Moira are doing some shopping and, you know, or buying a coffee or something in a cafe, and the cashier is saying, I'm sorry, your card doesn't work because they've cancelled all women's bank accounts.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've seen that kind of thing before. I guess they're going for some kind of emotional payoff. And the actress who plays Emily's wife is this actress named Clea DeVal, who I would say is not signed on for one episode because she's a quite well-respected kind of TV actress. So
yeah.
I expect we'll see her again at some point down the line, and I imagine there'll be an emotional payoff to that. At least we got to see beyond Gilead for the first time, right? Mm. Not that you'd want to...
Yeah, woohoo, the colony. Send me back to Gilead.
Right. So we got to see the colony, which is, I guess, some sort of like radioactive hellscape where everyone wears poorly chosen sky blue robes, and they are doing kind of indentured slavery work, toiling the soil for unclear reasons.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess, I would imagine that they bumped up the character of Emily to a more series regular, where she was a guest star in the first season, because the character proved very successful. And Alexis Bledel, who people would know as Rory Gilmore, won an Emmy for a guest star. So I would say that is kind of part and parcel of it. But it also that goes to show another sort of strength and weakness of the show, is that this is a show about women and about the role of women in society and how that is influenced by men. And the female characters, I think, are extremely well drawn and well presented, have nuanced kind of feelings and reactions to things. They have interesting backstories. The men are actually quite poorly served in this, in that you get, you know, a husband who, you know, her husband, so June's husband, who's off in Canada doing what? I don't know, I'm not sure yet, but he'll be in it.
At some point, we imagine.
Yeah. We have then Captain Waterford, who is, I mean, just kind of like mustache twirlingly evil.
Yes.
And you have then the driver, who is played by Max Minghella, who is Nick, who is... I mean, I'm very unclear what exactly he is beyond the hunk, right?
Yeah, and his motivation.
Yeah, what is
Well, actually, yeah, it's odd there, because he just seems to be a bit of toddy.
Yeah.
That they have there for the gratuitous sex scenes.
And, but I would say at least...
I feel so you.
And additionally, like, it's very unclear what his motivations are, because he seems to be both on her side and a spy and a driver and everything at the one time. So, but a goodie, and yet I feel like this show is just inevitably leading us up to the point where he betrays her, right?
Well, because he's assuming that it's his baby.
Yes, exactly.
If he learns any different.
Well, true.
Yeah.
So the male characters could do with a bit more polish and refinement, but listen, there are countless shows in which female characters have been poorly served, so...
Well, in fairness, though, it's probably not that much room to present a nuanced male character.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps the most intriguing character in it is the female villain, who is Aunt Lydia, right, who's played by Anne Dowd, who is this kind of... A very well-known character actress who you would know to see for years but would never know her name. And she, I mean, she really, like, is kind of viciously evil and cunning and all that, but seems to have bought into the regime completely and totally.
That scene where she's ringing the bell and weeping.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
It's great, right?
Yeah,
so the women are what you're here for.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, some bits of TV news. Claire Foy, is she going to get some more money now?
She's getting a Christmas bonus.
Yeah, good to know.
So The Crown was very much caught in the crossfire of the Me Too movement, but specifically in the Give Me My Money Me Too movement, when it was revealed earlier on this year that Matt Smith, who played Prince Philip, who I guess is the lead but playing second fiddle very much to Claire Foy's Elizabeth II, was being paid more than her per episode. Now, it wasn't revealed at the time how much more, but I think the Mirror came out with it earlier saying he was paid about £10,000 per episode more. So now the producers of the show have decided to address this by just paying her off with a lump sum of 200 grand.
Sweet.
Yeah, which I would happily take.
Yeah.
But they have said that in the next season, which we'll see kind of, let me see, Olivia Colman is taking over as Elizabeth II, Tobias Menzies as Prince Philip, and Helena Bonham Carter.
That should be a lot. Helena Bonham Carter being Princess Margaret.
And Olivia Colman is like just, you know, the best British TV actress going, you know. They will be on equal, it'll be equal money all round.
Sure about that. And Who Wants to Be a Millionaire is coming back. That's the good news. There may be part of this that's bad news.
Yeah. So it's coming back this Saturday. ITV are bringing it back to sort of celebrate the 20th anniversary of it.
Mm.
And they are bringing it back with Jeremy Clarkson in the hot seat, which...
Is Chris Tarrant...
I don't know why Chris Tarrant... I mean, you would imagine for the 20th anniversary you'd want to bring back him. But no, I mean, and I find Jeremy Clarkson almost unwatchable now. You know, he's... I'm just over him, really, is how I would say. But he's going to be doing it, and they have brought in a fourth lifeline as well. So it's only going to be 7 episodes, but I'm sure if it's a success, it'll be 7 more. But the fourth lifeline is going to be, like, there'll still be 50-50 Ask the Audience and Phone a Friend, and then there'll be Ask Jeremy. So...
I don't know, you idiot.
Yeah, basically.
I just don't see it working with him. I just don't see it
It'll
working with him.
It'll be on TV3 anyway.
Yeah, because Tarrant like had a certain amount of empathy and never, you know, even when people were stupid, Tarrant didn't point out that they were stupid. I can't see Clarkson resisting the temptation to do that. Right, a couple more shows to talk about after this break.
Now, James, this isn't the first time you and your wife have had a problem. Are the two of you going to be able to work this out?
Let's talk about some music.
You want to talk about music and you don't want to talk about what happened?
No, it's all over.
Well, let's talk about your tour. When are you leaving?
We're leaving tomorrow.
And where are you going?
Rio de Janeiro and São Paulo. Brazil.
Now, your fans will have read all about this, James. Aren't you concerned about that?
The guys, the Caramucci. I'm concerned because there's nothing wrong.
And what are you going to say to your fans when they ask you some questions about it?
I'm going to say, I feel good. Paula's got a brand new bag. It's a man's world.
On this day in 1933, James Brown was born, one of the soul greats. But as you heard there, also a total scumbag. What he was being asked about there was the fact that he'd just been arrested for allegedly hitting his wife with a piece of lead pipe and shooting at her in their car during an argument. And unfortunately, James Brown was involved in many incidents such as that. And, you know, it's kind of an odd thing that you might like someone's music, but then, or you know, you might admire a sports person or something, and then you see something else about some other aspect of their life, and it always causes a bit of a problem as to whether you should continue to listen to their music or not. Now, Niamh Hassel was in with us. She's doing an informative piece about going for a smear test, what happens to the results of that test, where it's tested, etc. She went down to the Well Women's Centre here in Dublin. Richard the Thatcher says, fair play. That's got to be one of the best, most full-on informative moments on radio, and massive respect to Niamh for sharing it with us. As I've a mum, obviously, six sisters, a daughter and a three-week-old granddaughter, this whole women's health thing means the world to me, and the recent shenanigans seem so insensitive and misogynistic that any exposure to the issue has got to be a good thing. The women collectively of Ireland deserve better, much, much better. Says Richard. Paula 150 says it was a metal speculum back in the day. A bit cold, but it got the job done. Though Paula also adds that she was a patient with a well woman for years and had her babies in the comb, and both gave fantastic service. Now, Cape Town in South Africa is currently suffering its worst drought in over a century. Many solutions have been suggested, but perhaps the most intriguing involves towing icebergs. That comes from the marine salvage specialist Nick Sloan. Nick, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sean. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you loud and clear. Thank you, Nick. Now, obviously, this seems to be a recurring problem that they're having in Cape Town. And there have been various suggestions to it, many of which seem to have their own disadvantages. What would be the distance you'd have to move an iceberg to get it from, I assume, the South Pole up to Cape Town? 53106 is our text number. That'll cost you 30 cents. A few texts on The Handmaid's Tale. The second series of that kicked off on RTE there last Thursday. I had to stop watching The Handmaid's Tale. It was far too depressing and it made me anxious, says the texter. I could kind of understand that. As James was saying, it's probably not the best kind of show to binge on. Someone else says, I read that Margaret Atwood never put any hardship on any character in The Handmaid's Tale that hasn't existed already. When you think about it, forced pregnancy, rape, genital mutilation, slavery. What a world we live in. Well, it's true in the sense that there are women in the world who live now under those kinds of conditions, perhaps not with the same kind of outfits, but the same kind of pompousy speeches you hear from their oppressors. But there are women who are subjected to all those things. As someone else says, I really hope they go into the background of Aunt Lydia's character. I know it's fiction, but the thought that women can perpetrate this kind of atrocity on other women is both fascinating and depressing. People can do it to people in all kinds of situations. But it would be interesting to find out, especially given that she's kind of outside, you know. How did she get to the position of being, of getting the job that she has? How did those women get that job that they have? I'd be interested to know that as well. Judy in Cork says, I would never ordinarily watch something so grim, but this is a great show. Elizabeth Moss is stellar in it. Brilliantly shot. Definitely not a binge show, but absolutely enjoyable in an odd way, says Judy. Yes, I do know what you mean. And Marion Mallow, James, she says, love your TV reviewer, so sexy. Could listen to that swoon-inducing voice all day and, come to think of it, all night long too, Mary. Do you want to tell her, James? No? No, suddenly no voice from James. You just enjoy it there, Mary, in your own imagination. Our next show is The New Legend of Monkey. Here's a clip.
You'll be safe here.
Please, I have to get to the forest. Can you help?
I think it would be best to wait.
You don't understand. That demon won't stop until he finds
me. What does he want with
you? It's not me he wants. It's
this. Scriptures told of a god who would wear such a
crown. The monkey king is real, and I know where he is. Please, I don't have time to explain. I just need to get to the forest.
I suppose before you talk about the new legend of Monkey, James, you're going to have to explain about the old legend of Monkey and this show that was so popular in the 80s.
Yeah, now I have to admit, this mine is just based on research I've done because I wasn't a fan, or I don't know if I was of viewing age or alive, even when it was this huge cult hit. But it's based originally, right, so in 1978, a Japanese TV channel, turned this 16th century Chinese novel, which is called Journey to the West, into a, I think, like two, you know, 50-something odd episodes.
Yeah.
And it's about this sort of sprightly monkey god who's played by a man who flies around on a magical cloud and has this staff that can stretch, and he can shrink to the size of an ant and various things. And he and a pig god named Pigsy and a water demon or god named Sandy and then a monk named Tripitaka went around on their merry adventures and suddenly waltzed right into cult TV stardom in particularly the UK, Australia, New Zealand and South Africa because the BBC bought the show and then they redubbed it with like some very famous people involved like Miriam Margolyes and Andrew Sachs and so on and so forth doing the most, I mean, contemporarily dodgy Chinese, Asian, Oriental accents
right,
you have ever imagined,
yeah.
Right? But it became this cult hit. Was hugely popular, and the only reason I know of it is because it would appear every now and again in kind of retrospective talking head TV shows and people talk about it. And it has a very well-known theme song called Monkey Magic, right? And I think it's even known as Monkey Magic in the UK. So Netflix and the ABC, which is the Australian Broadcasting Company, cobbled together a new 10-part remake of this in which you have a the original was set in China on the Silk Road to India. This is just set in a kind of habit, you know, thrown together, whatever you want, Asian fantasy world.
Yeah.
And there were originally a lot of complaints, as people are wont to do in 2018, about the fact that this is, you know, Chinese legend, but no Chinese actor was cast in the main role. The main guy, Monkey, is played by a guy named Chai Hansen, who's Thai Australian. Now, I would take a bit of grain of salt of that because there are four main characters in it, of which only one of them is white. Another one is Maori. Another one is Tongan, maybe. You know, it's people of color, right?
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
So hold your horses is what I'd say on that front. Now, this is kind of like, it's like the episodes are 25 minutes long. I've seen about five of them. This is family fare, right? So this is what you're sitting down to watch a bit of silliness with your slightly older children. And it's pitched at kind of a 12 range, but I mean, I'd say even lower than that is fine, right? It's just a bit silly. It's not particularly funny, right? You would kind of wish they would just have better jokes, but it's fairly diverse. It's grand is ultimately what it is.
Yeah.
It's, I think, if you loved Monkey, the original, right, you might get a couple of episodes into this with a bit of a nostalgia tap going on because there are some nods to kind of the faux Orientalism of it. But I would imagine, again, but I wasn't around at the time, part of the appeal of Monkey back in the day was this sort of over-the-top hammy Asianness, right?
Yeah,
and
it was like a bit crap and dubbed.
Yeah, exactly,
yeah.
Right? And obviously this is made originally in English. The special effects are made in 2018, so they're polished and clean and so on and so forth. And you're not going to get hammy, hammed up, Orientalism because that's really racist and
yes.
You can't do that anymore. So if that's what you're looking for, you're probably best off seeking out the Monkey box set online or finding it on YouTube, which I'm sure is where you can find it.
Yeah.
If you want to watch something along the lines of a hero's journey story, like, yeah, okay, it's grand. It's only 10 episodes long. It'll pass the time happily enough. But I'd say, for me, my attention has waned now, kind of five episodes in. I don't think I'll be finishing it off, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Right. Our third show is How to Cook Well with Rory O'Connell. It's on Tuesdays at 7 p.m. on RT1. Here's a clip.
So the soup has been chilling for an hour, and it's now nice and cold. Not too cold, but sort of fridge cold. And I need the rest of my ingredients, which are going to add colour, lots of lovely flavour and texture. So I've got some lovely radishes. I'm just going to use the sort of root part of the radish today. Then the other ingredient I'm going to use, which is going to add sweetness and beauty and visual interest, is some pomegranate. So to extract the seeds from the pomegranate, I'm not going to use all of this, so the rest of it I'll keep for my breakfast tomorrow morning. Cut it in half, turn the pomegranate upside down, stand back a little bit because it tends to spatter. And then gently just tap it like that to extract the seeds.
Sounds cracking altogether. Who is Rory O'Connell?
So Rory O'Connell is the co-founder of Ballymaloe House. Okay. And he's also Doreen Allen's brother. So yeah, he is part of that cooking dynasty.
Yes.
And the reason why I picked this is because it's kind of like, I think it's kind of interesting how Irish cookery shows differ from British cookery shows in the sense that they're not really, and I don't mean this to sound as negative as it might come across, there's like no sex appeal to it, right? I think often, I mean, look at Nigella, right? Nigella is about hamming up to, the eroticism of her TV delivery.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas this is just so straightforward. He's kind of like, it's almost so old fashioned in its own way. It's just Rory very, very politely sort of guiding you through cooking a 3-course meal, which always looks very tasty. But he has this, it all sort of comes across as this like aspirational viewing, right? As in he is like, he's this almost idealized sort of Irish middle-class, middle-aged man with his sort of foppish grey hair and glasses. He's got this beautiful house, the most perfect serving dishes you've ever seen. Everything goes well and perfectly for him. And like, it's all just kind of thrown together. And he even delivers, his delivery of the stuff is like, is a bit flavorless. Like, his pieces to camera are like, yeah, I'm just going to do this and this is grand and sure, won't it be nice and lovely?
Yeah.
It's lovely. And it's just, it's something very, this is something very.
Sure, like, it should be called I Can Cook and You Can't with Rory O'Connell.
It's just all very kind of pleasant, right, is how I would describe it. And I know, like, I'm not damning it with faint praise. There's something very easily watchable about it. There's no stress or anything. And it's just, it's kind of showing you how to make meals that would turn you into the best you that you can be. You know, that if you were able to produce this on the day with such a beautiful home and surrounded by friends and family, you'd be living your best self.
If you could afford a house like that, you just pay somebody to cook it for you. Does it always end with, fake friends bust in to have a great time with Rory?
No,
he's
entirely by himself. In fact, this one he even ended with a slight joke. So he was making popsicles, of which he was saying, you know, you might find it very funny to say the word popsicles. We might just say ice lollies. And how the joy, he was talking about the joys of having like a real icicle, you know, an ice lolly stick rather than a plastic one from a mold. But he was making almond tweels, and he was saying that if you hadn't managed to get them to sort of curve as they should be and be, you know, shaped like a roof tile, as which is where they get the name from, if any of your guests says that to you, well, you can say whatever you want to them, kind of thing. It was this very, like, it was as risque as the show gets.
Yes. But, yeah, but which just isn't very risque.
No, but just, there's just something eminently easy about the viewing. You know, it requires no, like, I mean, let's say, right, you're watching Handmaid's Tale, it's grueling,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
you're watching Monkey, it gets tiresome. This is just plain sailing, straightforward, simple pleasantness.
Okay. All right, fair enough. Well, I suppose the problem with a lot of food shows is that they've become samey, and all that faux enthusiasm that you get would wear you out.
There's only so many ways, you know, someone can say delicious, right?
Yeah.
And they really ham it up a lot of the times. But I like the kind of the simplicity of his show, that there are airs and graces, definitely, but they're seasoned to taste.
Right. Fair enough. Okay. James Dempsey, thanks a million. We'll take a break. Back in a minute.
TV.
On the radio.
Roll it there.
Hey, how you doing?
Bazinga.
Well, I didn't expect the kind of Spanish Inquisition.
One for everybody in the audience.
It's going to be legendary.
You just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
Moncrief. On News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. Gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.